Welcome to Ray and Tay today.
Mira mami, ven acá aquí. Come over here and dance with me. I see your body look so heavenly. Baby girl, you're delicious to me. Bala papa, part of me. I'm the type that's right and my game is tight. And I see, baby girl, you're looking alright. So what you got?
Hello? Hello, 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 and welcome to the show. We're waiting for Ray to come on in. You are listening to Ray and Tay today. I'm Tay, and we're waiting for Ray. So, listen, you want to join the adventure? Give us a call at 718-664-9098, and we shall be talking sports with friends today. We're going to go around the world of sports, give you some of the, you know, details and information, you know, that you might be missing, give Ray and Tay's opinions on things. Got a quick half an hour show for you today. You can call in at 718-664-9098. We'll get to some of your emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website at rayandtaytoday.com. And, as
I'm
always,
here,
you can hit us up on Twitter and Facebook. All right, so Ray has joined the show. Ray, let him know, man. I mean, I told him we're going to get into some stuff, go around the world of sports. Tell him how we're going to break it down.
Yeah, we're just going to bounce around today. So we've got the British Open. We've got some college sports. We had a busy week, SEC media days. We had the Heisman Trophy winner running around to the ESPYs and doing all kinds of interviews and you got some splaining to do, Lucy. We have Major League Baseball. We're going to talk some NBA also. So a lot to talk about in this quick half-hour show.
Definitely, definitely. Well, let's jump right into it. I mean, obviously, looks like our boy at the British Open, Miguel Jimenez, is in first place. He's minus three. And then we got a couple guys tied for minus two. Henrik Stenson, Lee Westwood, who's been looking really tough, and there's this guy that you might have heard of called
Dustin
El Tigre,
Johnson?
Tiger Woods.
I thought you meant Dustin Johnson.
No, I'm talking about Tiger Woods, yo, Tiger Woods, and Dustin Johnson's right behind him at plus one, Tiger Woods at even. So I think, you know, it's going to be a fun weekend. Obviously, with the time difference, you got to, you know, sort of get up a little early if you want to catch these guys tee off. But, you know, it should be fun. And they said the wind has been changing so much out there, Ray, that, you know, this is the birthplace of golf out there in Scotland and, you know, doing the British Open. You know, these guys, they're sort of – look at Zach Johnson. He was clearly up and then just – it seemed like he just kind of drifted away with the breeze and wound up plus four. So,
right, plus four today.
What do you think?
He's only two behind. He's only two behind. You know what it does? It sets up for a crazy weekend because you figure you can go all the way down to plus one, I would say. So that would be four strokes behind the leader, Miguel Jimenez. And you figure you've got 20 people that can legitimately say they've got
a
chance at this.
Yeah.
They don't even call it the British Open anymore. They call it the Open Championship in Mirfield. You don't know about Mirfield in Scotland?
I've been to London.
We need to take Ray and Tay on the road to Mirfield. We got, you know,
next
some
summer
of these links courses. You know, these are some crazy courses. Because, you know, in the U.S., you're used to the different types of courses, and the U.S. Open has is a very hard course, and the Masters stays the same, and the PGA Championship. But these courses, these links courses, in
well, they have bunkers
in
all over the place.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's no trees. It's all about bunkers, and it's all about, you know, that nastiness, that the rough that they have. But look, it shapes up to be. It's really you against the elements because between the wind and the links course conditions, you've got a whole different game that you need to execute at the British Open. So, you know, good for them. And look at the international representation, right? You've got a Spaniard. You've got a what do you got? A Brit, an Englishman.
A Brit.
You've
yeah.
got, yeah, you've got a Swede. You've got two Americans. You've got another. You got Angel Cabrera. You've got an Argentinian. Mm-hmm. You've got a South African. You've got an Italian, Ian Poulter, another Brit, Jason Day. You got an Australian. You got, you know, this is literally the UN represented over here.
It's fun. It's fun. And we'll see how it all breaks out. So why don't you tell us about, and let's get into this, before we get to Manziel, why don't you tell us about this lawsuit that is affecting people who love to, you know, play video games and stuff and some of these college athletes that's going on?
Yeah, well, for those old school basketball lovers, you'll remember a cat named Ed O'Bannon who played for the, what is it, 94 UCLA championship team. And they have a basic point, right? They got a class action lawsuit going on against the NCAA. And the point is basically that you guys are using our likeness to make video games, sell jerseys, and make money, and we want a piece of that. So in pro, in order to do that in any pro sport, when you have Madden or you have you know, NHL or NBA or whatever, the Players Association gets paid, and the rights to use the players and the players' likenesses goes through the Players Association and their media rights arm, and there's an agreement, and the players get some of that. But in college,
right, although,
they
real
don't.
Quick, let me just say this real quick, though. Although there's a new lawsuit separate from this for the old NFL players and their likeness, and they run those commercials all the time on NFL Network and on different stations. So some of the older NFL players were not getting paid. So I think that's kind of interesting to mention for their likeness. So maybe the current players, but not some of the old guys. So they've got a lawsuit that's going on right now that Jim Brown spoke about recently when he was interviewed, because he's trying to help, you know, some of these older guys who are not famous, who don't have a voice, help them out. So
interesting. So the bottom line here is that it's a class action lawsuit that some ex-NCAA players have joined. Football, basketball, and those are the two main money sports in college.
Yeah.
And they're trying
and the ones that have video,
to,
used to have video games for it.
Yeah, and they're trying to set this record straight retroactively. So don't know what this will mean, but certainly this whole notion of whether kids should get paid and stipends and if you can use people's likenesses. And here's the thing that's crazy is that, you know, these kids are getting a scholarship. I get it. So they are getting some kind of monetary value. But they're making a lot of money for the university. And not only that, but here's the thing. The kids who get their jerseys and get rings and get other things that they've earned as being part of a team, they can't even sell them. So, you know, kids trying to make a buck here or there, you know, will be in violation of NCAA rules. And
oh, it's horrible.
They have no way to make any money while they're students, and yet the universities and the conferences are making a ton of money on them. So there's something's going to happen, I think, that Mark Emmert and the NCAA and the you know, the thing with the players is there's nobody representing them, because you're a college athlete for 1, 2, 3, or 4 years, maybe 5 if you're a redshirt in football, and then you move on. So you don't stay the same, and you move on. And sometimes you move on to the NBA or NHL or whatever.
Right, there's not like a players league. Union or, yeah.
Right, there's not
I think that these
union
guys deserve something.
Players.
Yeah.
So I don't know how
I'm
you resolve
it, like this.
It, but it's going to be litigated. I mean, I think there's definitely going to be some losses.
Well, I mean, I'm sure legally they probably, you know, are in the right. I mean, so I think something's going to happen besides them not making – you know, NCAA college football, which has definitely upset a lot of gamers, and even my 13-year-old saw it go across ESPN today. He was like, what? No more college football? He's got to hold on to the one that he has from 2012 and just love it and play it. But, you know, I think when it comes to jerseys and all this stuff, to stop all the hypocrisy, these guys should be able – I mean, because they're almost getting pimped out for their likeness. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. You know, the reports that Johnny Manziel, who, you know, it's a perfect segue to talk about him, but this guy last year winning the Heisman and doing amazing things that have never been done at Texas A&M and for the SEC, you know, brought in, you know, close to $300 million for his university. It does not cost $300
million
for 1 year.
I think that was $300 million? You think he brought in that much money?
Listen, I don't know. I've heard different reports. I don't know if it was just him or the whole, you know, the school or football brought in. Maybe it was 30, but what does it cost? 40, 50,000 undergrad at Texas A&M?
Well, yeah, but, you know, to run the football program costs money. And
No, I'm not saying that, but these guys are all in the black. That's the point. And when you are taking, not taking advantage of these kids, but when you're making so much money and they're not getting a sandwich, you know, it's the balance. I just think it's unfair. Something's got to change and something's going to change. Same thing with all these different fake rules and laws in the NCAA has, because it's a mess. I think it's a complete mess.
Yeah, it's definitely a mess, and something's going to have to change. Like you say, these lawsuits might trigger a whole change in and the BCS contract coming up and all these mega conferences forming. So, there's change in the air. I don't know exactly what the outcome will be, but there's certainly change in the air. And the college, you know, college sports, even as we grew up with it, doesn't look the same. And I can bet you that in 10 years it'll look different again.
Yeah, and it should. Change is good. I mean, in all aspects of life, whether it's in sports, you know, culture, society, politics, you know, everything, change is good. So, you know, hey, whatever they got to do to make it sort of not just fair, but, you know, I guess good for everybody. So the college athlete can thrive and continue, because the reality is, when you're looking at football more so than any other sport, football now is really like a minor league. You know, people were talking about, you know, Johnny Manziel like as if he's not a 20-year-old kid, and then he's already like sort of preparing, you know, his resume and his job interview because he's in the SEC in college football. And I think, honestly, I got to be honest, I think if people took cameras and, you know, now granted, he shows off what he's doing himself, but if people wanted to follow all of us around when we were in college, when we were 20, you know, we wouldn't necessarily look so good.
Well, not only us, but think about this. Well, first of all, your point is well taken. There were 1,200 press credentials issued. Ray and Tay should have been down there at SEC Pro Days. Are you kidding me?
Super Bowl stuff.
That's more than the NFC Championship. You know what I mean? That's crazy. That's just crazy.
It's a minor
league. So yeah, the SEC is ridiculous, and college football is ridiculous. And what we put these young athletes through, the scrutiny that we put them through, is ridiculous too. So yeah, Johnny Manziel is a 20-year-old kid with a couple of dollars in his pocket, so at least they can't get on him for being, you know, where'd you get that money from, right?
It's unfair, right? Like, but they asked Shabazz Muhammad, oh, where'd you get the Gucci bag from? You know, his sister's a professional athlete. You know, his family bought it for him. I mean, I think it's like, wait a minute, calm down. Kids can have stuff. I mean, you act like they almost act as if, or they want every kid to be dead poor and not have anything, and that's unfair, and also in some situations could almost be, you know, prejudice or racist. But, you know, it's like if Johnny Manziel's parents want to let him go to a courtside basketball game or to see in some event, that's their business. And you know, and college football has no right to question him or Shabazz Muhammad for a Gucci bag. None of that stuff. It's just ridiculous. They got to stop it.
It's this whole notion of these guys are not professional athletes. Oh, and it brings up another point. Johnny Manziel shouldn't be in college. Johnny Manziel is a redshirt sophomore who's 20 years old, who should be in the pros, but because the NFL has decided that only 3 years out of high school can you come into our league, that's why Johnny Manziel is not a pro. Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M is a farce because the guy doesn't want to be there. He is too...
Wait, but don't you think he needs another year? I think he needs another year under his belt. You think one good season he's ready to play in the NFL?
No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that if the rules weren't these rules, Johnny Manziel would be in somebody's NFL training camp right now. I'm saying the rules are forcing him to stay. I believe that most kids benefit, especially in football, where you can eat, lift weights, bigger. Most kids benefit. But there is something to be said for this league is randomly dictating that you need to be 3 years out of high school. Johnny Manziel would never have come back to Texas A&M if not for the NCAA rules that made him go back. So Johnny Manziel is in school. He's forced to be in school. The guy could be on an NFL roster. Let's not debate if he'd be good in the NFL, bad in whatever. He'd be in somebody's camp right now for sure. So he's only in school because the NFL is forcing him to be in school, right? I mean, the guy wants to earn a living. He doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So,
no, that's
anyway,
listen,
that's a
very, very – yeah, that's another issue. But it's a fair point. It's a fair point. But you know what? Let's leave football alone, college football alone, and let's look at our guy. The All-Star game, first of all. Kind of boring. Great moment with Mariano Rivera. I was a little critical, but when you come and think about it, the eighth inning was perfect because it was guaranteed to have Mo come in. Everybody stood up for him. It was a great moment. The AL wins 3-0. Nathan gets the save. Mariano gets the MVP, which is kind of funny, right? Sale gets the win. And New York Mets were very gracious to Mariano. I think it was all around a good weekend into Monday and Tuesday for baseball, for the Mets, for New York, and definitely for Mo, who is he's very deserving of all the praise that he got. What did you think about that? And then we'll get into Jeter back on the DL. What did you think about the All-Star game and how they handled it?
I thought the script was perfect. You and I talked during the game, and I once they scored that third run, I guess maybe they couldn't get Nathan ready quick enough. I understand Leland. Leland was thinking a sure thing. If I say he pitches the eighth, then no matter what the score is, I know he's going to get a run. I would have gone for a little bit more of the dramatic flair and have him pitch the bottom of the ninth. And if it meant something, look, it was only up 3-0 going into the top of the ninth, right? So what's the worst that happens? The American League scores a bunch of runs. But, you know, it's okay. I thought that he pitched his eighth. There was a really cool moment that everybody came off the field, right? So I don't know if you could see that on TV, but it didn't dawn on me until afterwards. Because, you know, you figure the spotlight is always on the pitcher. And so Mariano was tipping his cap, and then I said to myself, all right, this doesn't seem too outrageous. But when you pan back out and you see that the eight other players on the American League were off the field, so Mariano was
wanted
to find himself.
Yeah.
It was hard to capture that moment on TV. I'm sure if you were there at City Field,
chilling.
Then it was like, whoa, this is crazy. I've never seen anything like this. But, yeah, it worked out great.
Well,
he's
loved by everybody.
Yeah,
I give him that credit. He's loved by everybody in the game and great for the game. It looks like we got A-Rod, possibly coming back, in Texas, ironically. There's rumors of the Cubs trading Garza. Derek Jeter's back on the DL. We're hoping Grandison comes back soon. So in the second half of the season, sort of tell me, like, I think somebody, like, for example, like, that's not in first place that could bounce back, maybe the Giants in the West taking over the Diamondbacks or maybe the Tampa Bay Rays in the American League East. What do you think is something to really look for in baseball second half?
So the first thing on my agenda is to see if my Pittsburgh Pirates can hold on and not have a third straight summer
collapse.
Swing. Yeah, because...
But this is the longest they've held out in a long time, I mean.
Right. And so I think they're five or six games ahead. And expanding the playoff, at worst, you want to see them get into that one-game playoff because you want to see a playoff game in Pittsburgh. I was in Pittsburgh the last time they had a playoff game in Pittsburgh. So I want to see this happen. I'd love to see the Pirates hold on. I'd love to see them win that Central Division, but maybe
it's hard. As good as the Cardinals are,
Cardinals
got a game. They still got a game up on them, and then you even still got the Reds right in the mix, five games back. Maybe we'll see the Nats. The Nationals catch the Braves. Who knows? Braves with their different injuries with the Upton guys and their players. Can you see the Dodgers waking up? The division is so tight, right? Giants are in last place, and they're only, 6.5 back. But the Dodgers are only 2.5 back, ladies and gentlemen. So Yasiel Puig has got them sort of alive and well, the Dodgers, and, of course, the pitching. Can you see at 47-47, can they overtake the Diamondbacks, who are 50-45?
Think they can. I think they're lucky enough that the league didn't run away from them, that the division, I should say, didn't run away from them. And I think the Dodgers are going to win that division. I think Arizona, inconsistency in the starting pitching, and I think that...
Well, Ian Kennedy got banged up, and some of their pitchers have been hurt. J.J. Putz has been inconsistent. D-backs have had some injuries, too.
I think that this is the opportunity that the Dodgers need. And I think that the Dodgers are going to take advantage of that. The other team that I look to potentially do big things. Well, first of all, I want to see also on the are they for real. I want to see if the Cleveland Indians are for real. I mean, my fear is that they're going to fall back a little bit and they can't have the same second half that they had in the first half. But I'd love it if they did.
And Detroit's already passed them. They're a game and a half up on Cleveland.
Detroit's got too much talent. I don't think that ultimately that Cleveland can beat Detroit for the division, but
Kansas City dropped down to 8 games back.
Yeah, they're 6 games under 500.
It happens so fast, right? Sometimes you see these teams, but what's interesting though too? Not only I was saying before the Diamondbacks are sort of catching up; they're 2.5 behind the Red Sox, and then the Orioles are right there. And Yankees still alive; they can get healthy; they have a shot. But Orioles are 4.5, so the Orioles and Rays, you got to watch for them. But how about the Rangers? The Rangers are 2 back with the A's. They kind of are going back and forth with each other. That's going to be a nice race, and it doesn't look like the Los Angeles Angels, with all of that money, Ray, that they've put out there for that team, they're garbage right now, 44-49, yuck.
These teams are feeling the Yankees' wrath of the 80s. Where? George Steinbrenner brought Dave Winfield in the early 80s. He had Reggie in the late 70s, but Reggie got him the 2 titles. Dave Winfield, and then he brought Ricky Henderson and Jack Clark and all these guys. And it just – it's funny because you would think that baseball is the most individual of all the sports. And yet, even in that sport, there's something to be said – for putting a team together, for building a team, for building chemistry, for putting building blocks together.
Manufacturing runs, all of it. Yeah.
There's something to be said for that because the Angels, their roster, you could argue, they kind of sacrifice pitching for hitting, but they're not even hitting. So on paper, they should be banging the ball around the yard, and they're not even doing that.
No, they should be getting 6 runs a game with that offense. They really should.
That team, that team is probably going to be, if you write them off this year, I think that team is going to bounce back with a vengeance next year. So I wouldn't, if I'm an Angel fan, I wouldn't be too worried. But long term, you still have some really young studs, starting with Mike Trout, but I still think you have some good years out of Hamilton and Pujols and Trumbo and all the. So they've got a nice combination of really, really young, mature superstars, and they're a pitcher away. They'll be fine. I just don't think they're going to do much this year.
They're looking old to me. It could be over for them, and next year could even be worse. I don't know. We'll see. So speaking of sort of old superstars, we spoke about this off air, and we segued to the NBA, and there's a couple of signings we got to mention and talk about. It just looks like the Rockets, they just brought back point guard Aaron Brooks, who the Knicks were looking at, and they're saying the Knicks are looking at Bobby Brown and Sebastian Telfair.
Is Bobby Rogers?
Yeah, my prerogative. See, you know, don't be cruel. So, but your boy Prokhorov, who the owner of the Nets, the Russian billionaire, and we saw the press conference yesterday of Garnett and Pierce, and I love their honesty, right? They kind of look like, well, we didn't want to leave Boston, but I guess if we had to go anywhere, we don't mind coming to Brooklyn. This guy is spending $80 million over the luxury tax. That's quite a hefty amount that is a record in the NBA. Do you think that it could be worth it for Brooklyn to get a title? And does this team, and he's put together quite an impressive bench. I mean, we talked about Kirilenko and all these other guys. You know, I like, you know, Jason Terry, and we've talked about Blatch and, you know, Plumlee and Evans. You know, they're kind of deep. Not so much in the backcourt, but do you think it's all worth it for him? And for and for Brooklyn?
Let me put it this way. I'll flip the question on you a different way. If he wins a title, it better be worth it, because that's why you're there. You're spending $180 million. You're paying, what, $82 million in luxury tax money. So if you win a title, it's worth it. It has to be, right? And if you don't do that, then you're just not rational. You're not sane. The question is, when does it become worth it? Does it become worth it if you're the fourth-place team in the Eastern Conference and you, let's say, beat the fifth-place team, which might be the Knicks? Let's say you beat them in the first round and you lose in the second round. Is it worth it to go out in the second round in the playoffs? So, in other words, at what round does losing in the finals make it worth it? Does losing in the conference finals make
it
worth
for
it, right?
Them,
at what
I,
point
I,
is it worth it?
No, you're right. And I think for them, to me, if they don't win it this year, it's not going to get any easier the next season. The one thing I will say, and I was sort of surprised by this, you know, and I had to give props checking out Mike and Mike this morning, and just thinking about Pierce and really looking up his stats. I mean, last year he had 18-5-6, shooting 43%. So Pierce and Garnett, they still have something. They're not coming over there just to play 20 minutes. They might play 26 minutes a game, but they're going to give you quality minutes. And really, they're ready. Those guys are playoff ready. They're about the playoffs, right? And where D. Will and Joe Johnson are not clutch, guess what? Pierce and KG, they are clutch. And their depth, I really like what they're doing. But like you said, I don't know if they're better than what the Pacers have done. Just, you know, Pacers and Bulls, health-wise, just getting back Granger and Rose, they're already better. You know, you could argue if the Bulls, you know, bringing in Dunleavy and losing Bellinelli, maybe it's a wash. They lose Nate Robinson, so the Bulls might not be necessarily that much better, but they will be better because of D. Rose. The Pacers, C.J. Watson, Chris Copeland, Granger, you know, they made some serious moves, and then, you know, the Heat are the Heat. So, you know, which, by the way, Mike Miller might sign with the Thunder, which could be kind of interesting. So you're right. I don't know, and to be honest, you know, who knows? Maybe Amari is so healthy that everybody's just assuming the Knicks could be the fifth seed. Well, if Bonyarny works out, he's healthy, and Amari's healthy, and, you know, JR is going to be a little bit delayed with the knee. But who knows? The Knicks might be better if Amari's, you know, really healthy. So there's so many wild cards, but I don't know if they're better than the Pacers, Bulls, or Heat, let alone
the
West, right?
Well, you know what's interesting is that it's funny because there's so much experience in the Eastern Conference that all of this, the regular season doesn't matter. You just want it to be April of 2014 already, because the Pacers are built for the playoffs. The Nets are built for the playoffs. The Heat are the two-time defending champions. Derrick Rose and those defense, you know, defense travels, right? Defense is great in road games and playoff series. So I can't wait to see the Eastern Conference play. Obviously, the West has got probably, you know, five of the top eight or nine teams in the league, six, seven of the top ten. But that Eastern Conference playoffs is going to be so intriguing. Can the Heat go three times to the – I mean, can they go four times, I guess,
four times in a row to the finals?
I mean,
I think it's going to be a lot harder this year, if I'm being honest. I think it's going to be harder this year.
Yeah, I really do. You know what? You're not as hungry. You're not as hungry the third time, the fourth time. So they had a lot to prove last time and this time. But I think when you start to get, you know, to your third championship, to your fourth finals, or do you wait for his fourth championship? I don't know. I don't know if the hunger's as strong as it was to get your first one.
Well, I'll tell you this. I like what the Warriors and Rockets have done, but I like what the Clippers have done. The other day, you know, we got to mention, well, the Mavs signed Samuel Dalembert, where we got to give him some love. I don't know what the Mavs and Lakers are doing. I think they're just going to battle for the eighth spot, right? But the Warriors, you know, they added Tony Douglas as well, a little veteran off the bench. I know he's not as good as Jarrett Jack, but, hey, it helps. Jermaine O'Neal, you know, sort of replaces Carl Landry. And Andre Iguodala is incredible because if Barnes is your sixth man, the Warriors are tough. But the Clippers got my main man from the Charlotte, no longer Bobcats. The league officially passed it, the Charlotte Hornets, which is great to get their name back, right? That's where it belongs. And then New Orleans goes to the Pelicans. The player who is the perfect power forward for them, Byron Mullen. I love Byron Mullen's game. He can score, get on the offensive glass. He does dirty work. And I guarantee you he will be a big help off the Clippers bench. Clippers are going to be nice. Watch.
I tell you what, you know what this means to me? This means to me that weakness that they had with in the front court in terms of where they can go, and more importantly, the fact that both Blake Griffin, who's only a 60% shooter, and DeAndre Jordan, who's like 36% shooter, that's a huge weakness. So I tell you what, we're fired up in July for the NBA.
Oh, yeah. And, well, listen, it's exciting because with the new collective bargaining agreement, this is what they designed. A lot of one-year deals, a lot of player movements. The big guys will get big money. Everybody else is going to get these smaller contracts. So even next offseason is going to be big-time free agents, mid-level free agents, smaller guys. I mean, I think it's embarrassing, though, that someone as good as Nate Robinson and the season that he had, the playoffs that he had with the Bulls, can't get more than a one-year deal. Maybe he will. You know, but I think little Nate, you know, he deserves to be on a team, and what a great spark off your bench as he, you know, held it down for the Bulls and single-handedly almost, you know, took out the Nets, you know, of course, with Noah and Boozer. But, you know, Nate Robinson is a good player, and he might have to sign a one-year deal again. So, I mean, it's interesting, and I think the NBA offseason is fantastic. Soon, Ray and Tay will be talking about a little bit of training camp. You know, we definitely
Can we say now that if the Clippers do indeed sign Byron Mullen to a 2-year contract, I got to say, honestly, that the Nets and Clippers have the best rosters in the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have LeBron. And they don't have, you know, the best.
But from one to twelve,
or one to, you know, realistically eight play in the playoffs, 1, 8, or 9. Those two teams have ridiculous rosters. Now they both may finish fourth in their conference, but you know those two teams have an unbelievable roster.
Yeah, and they could also finish number one, depending on health of, like, D. Wade and Westbrook and these knees. And, oh, by the way, before we end the show, and we'll be back on Monday, your man or my man, both of our mans, Kobe Bean Bryant, there's rumors that he could be there for the preseason or start of the season. I don't believe it. I think it would be incredible. I don't know if it's HGH or deer antler spray, but – you know, Ray went through this injury. I talk about Jeter with the ankle, and you see now his quad is hurt because your whole body has got to be rebuilt when you hurt something like an Achilles or an ankle, and people just don't understand. I got to put it on the record. Tay would be amazed if Kobe Bryant is playing opening night, and then at the same time, not only amazed, I'd be a little suspicious. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know if deer antler spray helps you with your Achilles, But I do know, after having gone through an Achilles injury, yeah, I might have to Google that. I do know, after having gone through a full ruptured Achilles, that you can come back as soon as, you know, 5 months, 6 months, back to walking and maybe some running. But here's the thing. Your body heals with the help of some surgery, but you've got to be at an elite level and play at an elite level as Kobe wants to do. So in order to do that, you really need to give your body a few more months to get all the other muscles that you've neglected and that have atrophied and to build up the Achilles and all that. So even if
that's
he's ready, I think it's I think it's premature. I think and what are they playing for? The seventh seed, the eighth seed? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Smart.
They're
gonna
battle
to
Minnesota and Portland and then Phoenix, you know?
Yeah,
to
the
try
smart
to get
thing
in that
to
eighth
do
spot.
Is to come back 100% healthy, figure out if you're Kobe. You're probably gonna play for another year or two anyway. So I think you chalk 13, 14 up to, you know, uncertainty and getting healthy, maybe getting to know some teammates, and then 14 is your big the summer of love in LA.
Right,
so
when you try
I
to recruit LeBron and Melo.
Right, and everybody
LeBron
knows you're a warrior. Kobe doesn't have a reputation of being soft and not playing through pain. I mean, he has a reputation for other things.
No,
but he doesn't have a reputation for that.
No,
so
he's
you don't
a warrior.
Need to prove anything to anybody if you're Kobe. So to come back for the first game of the season, I think is short-sighted and even could be hurtful to him personally, and then, you know, to the Lakers. So if he does, I frankly hope he doesn't.
Well, maybe Jim Bush was, you know, he said this on NBA TV yesterday when Lakers playing against the Bucks. But maybe he just sort of, maybe it's just about selling tickets and keeping, you know, people's hopes up and stuff.
Keeping
I think
the buzz so
sort of,
people don't start becoming LA Clippers fans. Maybe the marketing department.
Basically.
Like,
yeah, basically. So.
It's the buzz. You need
well,
to,
listen,
like,
we had a great show. You know, and we might have a guest on Monday, a little NBA guest, a friend to the show. So we'll see. You know, I don't want to throw it out there definitely because, you know, he's a busy guy. But we might have a show, a guest on Monday. But we will be back Monday, 6 Eastern at our normal time. And it was fun just bouncing around, hitting up all the sports, and you know, and having fun talking sports with friends.
Have
Ray
a great weekend.
Today.
Stay cool. It's hot all over the country, so stay cool. Drink your liquids. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on the other side. We'll see you on Monday.
Definitely. Have a great one. Ray and Tay, we're out.
Mine.